Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to the Julian Story Aviation Podcast. Hello and welcome finally to episode one of the Julian Story Aviation Podcast. In this edition, we'll be talking about the coronavirus pandemic and Biggin Hill Airport, about the brilliant Atoll Aurora amphibious light sport aircraft, and finally about the ongoing issues with the Boeing 737 MAX. So the coronavirus pandemic has had a more profound effect on aviation than anything else I can remember in my 23 years in the industry. All four of the aircraft that we look after are grounded, and one of them stuck in South Africa. The entire EasyJet fleet is grounded along with most of the British Airways fleet, and there's no sign of things going back to normal anytime soon. But London Biggin Hill Airport is still open, so there must be somebody still managing to fly. Joining me now is Andy Patsalides from Biggin Hill Airport. Andy, hi.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, who's flying?
I'm quite surprised at who's flying in terms of how essential everything is in terms of our movement. So who's flying at the moment? In terms of people, you know, we are a very discreet airport, so I'm not going to tell you who the customers are.
Of course.
But the few passengers that are coming through are, frankly, very essential. I know, without going into too much detail, we've had flights where people have been meeting other people in Europe, for example, to talk about manufacturing ventilator machines and that sort of thing. We're carrying a number of flights which are bringing in essential equipment, a lot of medical supplies, etc. Yesterday, for example, we had an Army Wildcat doing a trial COVID-19 flight, just checking us out because obviously we're right next door to the Nightingale Hospital at the Excel Centre.
Sure.
And as you may be aware, London City is closed at the moment.
Yes, it is.
So who's travelling? The key word is it's people who need to travel because their travel is essential. You know, the airport is fully operational. We've maintained the operating hours. 0530 Zulu to 2230 Zulu, and that's purely to make sure that as part of the national infrastructure we're doing our bit, you know, for the country and for London in particular.
Very good. So I mean, obviously private general aviation, recreational flying, that's all been that's all banned. Is there any BizJet stuff still happening, or is it purely the stuff related to the coronavirus pandemic?
There is BizJet flights happening, but I must stress they, for us to accept them, they have to prove that they are of an essential nature. You know, you can't have people going on holiday or whatever. That is banned now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So all traffic is either flight planned or PPR'd and checked by our air traffic control team, and they must prove it's essential. So at the moment, the days of recreational flying, I'm afraid, that's not happening.
Absolutely.
The only other exception is that there are... As with commercial airlines, pilots need to keep current and aeroplanes need to keep current, etc. So we do have an initiative called Return to the Skies,
okay,
which enables people, owners, to keep their crews current and their aircraft current. And we can talk about that perhaps in a moment about what the actual deal is, because just this week alone I've had four of those Return to the Sky flights.
Yeah, I mean, I've not flown for nearly a month. It's important that my client's aircraft, we've got an aircraft based at Biggin Hill, it's important that my client's aircraft flies, it's important that I fly, I don't want to forget how to do it. So how does that scheme work?
So the Return to the Skies initiative, it's you know, our view is it's not about now, it's, you know, we feel that we have an obligation to do all we can to help business aviation restore as quickly as possible. And the initiative we've come up with is not, and it's not just for you as a base aeroplane, but also for anybody else who wants to bring their aircraft to Biggin.
Okay.
It's really, we've just slashed the cost right down. You just pay for one landing, one fee, and in the same day you can do another six takeoffs and landings. And that's proven to be very successful. So I've had a G650 this week, but Global Express, two citations. People are taking advantage
really
of
good.
That.
Yep.
And I think people are really appreciating that initiative.
Absolutely right. Yeah, no, that's really, really important. And I saw somebody, I think it was Rob Bolt, was advertising trying to encourage freight into the airport, which presumably is going to help keep everything ticking over whilst the world as it is. What are we doing with that?
So there's two categories there. What we've been seeing with the freight flights that have been coming in is that they're obviously smaller aircraft. We're taking up to ATR 42, ATR 72.
Okay.
You know, we're not a major cargo hub like, say, East Midlands, but we do have the forklifts, etc. So people have been taking advantage of that. We had a 146 freighter test flight as well recently. And they kind of fall into two categories. We've got people basically bringing in essential medical supplies or PPE-type equipment.
Okay.
Not a lot of it. But the key message is we're there for them.
Yep.
You know, we weren't traditionally seen as a freight airport, but one or two customers have woken up to the fact that, blimey, they're actually in London, Biggin Hill. This does make a lot of sense.
Absolutely right.
And people are taking advantage of that.
Yeah, and there's I think London is a coronavirus hotspot, isn't it? You've got all the hospitals in London. You've got the Nightingale Hospital at the XL Centre. So yeah, I guess you are probably the only airport that is literally right in London that can manage ad hoc freight at the moment.
Yeah, and just on that, on the medevac side, obviously we've had a number of medical and repatriation flights into Biggin recently. One critical thing about that is at the moment London City is closed.
Yeah.
We're about 20 to 30 minutes from the Nightingale Hospital at London City.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting yesterday that we had the army in with a Wildcat up from Yeovilton doing a bit of an evaluation to see, what the fueling situation, the fire category, all those sort of operational
yeah.
things.
And all
and
of those all of those things are being maintained at a normal level, are they?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're fully operational. And it was great because after they did that evaluation, we got a great email from two group of Bryce Norton that are controlling these movements, informing everybody on the military side that Biggin is there for them, that it is fully operational, fuel is available, fire category 6. So that trial was very, very successful. So if they do need to do that, you know, we can take C-130s, we can take 146s, we can take the helicopters, and our friends in the military now know that. So that's, I'm really quite pleased about that.
That's brilliant. So how long do you think it's going to last? There's a big question. Nobody knows. The lockdown's been extended for three more weeks. I mean, there's no end in sight,
yeah.
is there?
No, I don't know when it's going to last. I mean, we, as a management team, as a leadership team, we get together every morning at 10 o'clock on the Zoom or one or two of them.
We're all discovering Zoom now, aren't we? Yeah.
Yeah, we're all discovering Zoom. And that includes, so we're not taking any rest. We're working every day of the week, and we're just reviewing it every day. It's interesting for me. What's particularly interesting is our potential customers and those are really appreciating it, because the numbers, although the traffic is significantly reduced,
yeah.
say for example there are about 25 business jet movements a day,
yeah.
probably about 70% of those are coming to Biggin. Very few are going to other locations.
Is that right?
You know, some airports already have got very restrictive hours. Stansted's an example of that, for example, where they'll take a biz jet before 10 or after 4, but not in between.
Yeah.
So very quickly, our the business aviation community is quite that visual. We haven't deviated from our hours one jot.
Yeah, most of the other airports have cut back into with level of cover or operating hours, but you're absolutely as normal.
Yeah, absolutely as normal. We are taking every precaution. So every evening we're fumigating every aspect of the passenger
right?
terminal.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we're blessed because we have, I mean, among our many resident companies, and we have 70 resident companies, We're blessed because we have jet wash based at Biggin. So if someone needs their aircraft fumigated or whatever, they're on site and they do a fantastic job for us once 11:30 happens, in absolutely deep cleaning everything every evening. And those sort of things, I think, are a benefit, and people are appreciating that.
That's interesting, actually. Are operators tending to clean their aircraft more because of the coronavirus pandemic? Is that a normal thing now?
I think it is. I do think it is. I don't know what the numbers are before, but virtually every airplane I see or hear of coming into Biggin, they're taking advantage of that opportunity. Everybody's being very, very sensible about this, taking every precaution possible. So I'm just very, very pleased that, you know, we have that capability on the airport.
Well, I'm glad you're still managing to operate to some extent, and I hope things get back to normal, well, for all of us, before too much longer. Maybe we'll speak to you in a couple of weeks if this is still carrying on.
Well, you know what? I hope we're not going to speak in a couple of weeks because it's carrying on. Speak to us when the good times are back. There's lots of wonderful things happening at Biggin still. You know, we're about to dig the first spade in our new 4-star hotel. We're getting on with that project. Investment is still happening.
Oh, is that right?
And we're
okay.
blessed. Let's
talk about the hotel, because that's been on the cards for a long, long time. For as long as I can remember, there's been going to be a hotel at Biggin. That's now happening, is it?
It is now happening. And in fact, you know, obviously we're being very cautious about what we're investing in. But to us, that is essential. The background to that is that we're blessed at Biggin in that we have 11 maintenance organisations, more than anywhere else in Europe.
Yep.
Now, one of those is a very big player, which is Bombardier, for example.
I mean, they've got the old Risingjet facility, which is impressive of itself, but they've outgrown that, haven't they?
Well, yes. I mean, we were laying concrete down just this week for the new facility, which is large enough to take 14 global 7,500s. I mean, it's a massive facility. But we already have a number of people who've been really keen for us to put a hotel facility in.
Yeah.
And we just think it's a sensible thing to do. So 56 rooms. I need to be very straight with you. It's still going to take about possibly 18 months before it's fully running. Yeah. But we're going to get on with it. And I think the key thing for us is we're blessed because we have a superb relationship with our local authority. Yeah. They're very, very supportive. I mean, the magic of Biggin for me always was in my time there was, and I've been in this game a little while, I'm in my 60s, so I've been at this a while, is they actually allowed us with marvellous support, allowed us to extend our operating hours a couple of years ago, and that transformed the airport business and transformed people wishing to invest.
It absolutely has. I mean, before when you used to open up, was it 8 local or something? And if I was flying people to, I don't know, say Paris, by the time we left, it was already 9 o'clock in Paris. It was too late. But now you can leave at a sensible time and get to Europe before everybody starts work.
That's right. So what I'm really, and apologies for all this positive spin here, but what I'm really saying is, I really hope we don't have another call about the crisis. And next time you talk to me, you know, we are back to normal. And I can tell you about all the wonderful investments we're making and, you know, why Biggin is the place. It really is the ideal gateway. Look, the bottom line, at the end of the day, what we're really about is making sure that we're there to support, you know, the uninterrupted flow of, you know, international business people coming in to invest in our capital.
Yeah.
That's what business aviation is about. It's
absolutely
bringing people
right.
together, make investments, create jobs, etc. So I hope next time we get a chance to talk about that.
Well, hopefully,
and I'm very grateful. Thank you for
that.
Great. On your podcast.
No problem. Hopefully next time we can do it face-to-face and we'll have some better sound quality.
Thank you.
Andy,
all the very best.
Thank you so much, Andy. Thanks a lot. Take care. Bye-bye.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Bye-bye.
So as many of you know, we're the UK Republic of Ireland and Isle of Man distributor for a brilliant light sport aircraft amphibian called the Atoll Aurora. Joining us now is Ari Tolonen from Finland, who is the test pilot. Ari, hello.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm very good. So first of all, let's talk a little bit about what the aircraft is. I've seen one. It's brilliant. I'm very excited to be involved with it. What can you tell us about the aircraft?
Well, it's a two-seater amphibian. It has quite unique features when we're talking about the amphibian world. I mean, the canopy opens front to front, so you can actually step off when you beach it or put it in the pier. The seats are not side by side. The pilot sits a little bit in the front, so the shoulder space is more. Actually, the cockpit space is large, in my opinion. The canopy will be a little bit bubbled, so there's enough space for the pilots and the passenger. As in all modern aircrafts nowadays, the primary data is presented on screens. So it's a 10-inch screen in front of the pilot.
Nice, and that's instrument. That's Dynon, isn't it?
Yeah, that's Dynon. And the engine instruments are on separate one. That's a 7-inch screen. And the cool thing is actually that the screens lift off with the canopy, so you cannot stumble on them when you're getting out of the plane.
It's really cool.
It's powered by Rotax 912 Sport,
yeah,
which means about 100 horsepower. It has the best torque in that engine family.
Okay.
And I mean, Rotax has been producing those different variants, of course, but tens of thousands, and it's been a reliable engine. It's quite light also. It sits on the top of a pylon. It's a pusher.
Okay. So a little bit like a Lake Buccaneer.
It's a little bit like that. So the basic idea is the same, but the engine is actually tilted downwards 6 degrees, okay, and to the left 7 degrees.
Okay.
So the first thing that comes to mind on a pusher on top of a pole is that if you actually throttle down, what the nose does. And the situation of the engine actually helps, and the current flow from the propeller, that it acts exactly like, let's say, Cessna 172 or 150. When you push on power,
yeah,
the nose will rise.
Yeah.
And if you take off the power, the nose will go down.
Okay.
So that's a safety feature.
Okay. Because the Buccaneer, you have to put ballast in the nose. If an engine fails and you don't have the ballast, it will pitch up, potentially fatally. So that's been designed out of the Atoll Aurora.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
And otherwise, the plane is a wood composite,
yep,
structure, very rigid, and doesn't absorb any water,
yep,
which is good. So it's light, and 75% of the weight of the aircraft is actually wood. That's remarkable.
So being wood and composite, that should eliminate a lot of the corrosion issues that you would have with a more conventionally constructed amphibious aircraft.
Yes. I mean, we are seeking for... The planes are probably used in places where it's humid. There's salt water present. So to minimize the effects to the aircraft has been taken in consideration when designing it.
Okay.
Of course, there are stainless steel parts. There are Kevlar.
Yeah.
Besides the wood composite structure. But that, of course, it shows in the later date.
Okay.
How it actually works in the seawater. But we believe it'll be, well, less time-consuming to take care of it.
Absolutely right. Absolutely
right.
Let's put
that way. Yeah.
Because most float planes, once you've operated them on salt water, you're going to spend a couple of hours hosing everything down, try and get all the salt water out of everything before you have a corrosion disaster.
Yeah, but then again, you need to do that anyway. You hold it down with fresh water every now and then.
Yeah.
The fuel tanks are on the wings.
Okay.
It's rubber foam tanks.
Yeah.
80 liters.
Yeah.
All together, usable fuel. That means roughly 4.5 hours.
Okay, 4.5 hours of fun.
Enduring.
Yeah.
Yep. If you, and if you take in consideration, you always need to have, let's say, 30 minutes reserve. That means 4 hours flying time.
Okay, very good.
On cruise speed, which is roughly 87 to 90 knots.
Okay.
It has a retractable gear, of course,
yep.
But also retractable wing floats.
Okay.
That'll give us up a couple of knots more on cruise speed. The wing floats actually are electrically operated.
Okay.
You can put it on auto, which means that below a certain speed, they come out.
It's a nice feature.
Or you can operate those manually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the wing floats act as bumpers.
Okay.
So if you come to a pier, it sits in front of the leading edge.
Okay.
If you take the first blow, if you're going on the beat for sure.
Right, okay. What happens is you damage the wing float rather than the actual wing itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Very good.
It gives, and also it gives in because it's movable.
Okay.
So it's like a bumper.
Okay, amazing.
At the same time.
Very good. So in terms of progress, how are we doing with the certification? Has that been delayed by the coronavirus?
It has been delayed, yes. Unfortunately, there are some parts that we cannot acquire from subcontractors because they have shut their businesses down.
Understand.
But the latest schedule that actually we put it out beginning of this week, yeah, is that we get the first serial production aircraft airborne in mid-June.
Okay.
Latest end of June.
Okay.
That's the plan right now.
Very good. How long do you think the certification process will take?
The test flight program, it's the first 26 flights are crucial ones because then we have to actually show all the figures, well, actually test all the figures are right.
Yeah.
And after that, it's 100 hours of endurance tests.
Okay.
So we are hoping to have it done by the end of this year, at least.
Okay.
So type certification expected somewhere in October, November.
Okay. Okay.
So roughly 5 months after we have started the test flights.
No problem. Very good. So for any of our listeners who were interested in buying one of these, if they put their deposit down, when could they expect to get their aeroplane?
Well, numbers 2 and 3. The first aircraft will stay at the factory.
Yep.
That's what's been decided. The number 2 goes to Finland.
Yep.
So aircraft number 3 is the next available slot.
Okay.
And I would roughly say that 1 year time frame. I mean, we're talking about February, March next year for number 3.
Brilliant.
At this time. Yeah.
Yeah.
It has foldable wings, so it's easy to store, and we have a mobile hangar available.
Okay, so for anybody who wants more information on the aircraft, Atoll have a website. It's atollavion.com, atollavion.com. And if anybody would like to be kept up to date with the certification process, like any further information, or just enable me to keep in touch with them, feel free to drop me an email, atoll@julianstory.co.uk. Ari, thank you so much.
Thank you, Julian.
So, Boeing's problems continue with the world's entire fleet of their 737 MAX aircraft remaining grounded following two fatal crashes where the aircraft appear to have flown themselves into the earth, or the Java Sea in the case of the Lion Air accident. To understand a little bit more about how this could have happened, I'm joined by Captain Sandy Whittaker, who flies the 800 and NG variants of the Boeing 737, and who has some understanding of how the MCAS stall prevention system, the suspected cause of these two accidents on the MAX, works. Sandy, hi. What is the MCAS system, and why does the MAX have it?
Right, okay. Well, there's two good questions there. Obviously, the first one, the what is it, we'll probably get back to that in a second. Probably what is initially more important to set the background as why is it fitted, as you've just said. So ultimately, the 800 is a derivation of the classic 737, and of course, the MAX is the latest version of the NG. Now, part of its design and requirements was that it still fitted the same bill in terms of type ratings.
So that the crew that the airline had could just put slot a pilot straight in without having to send them on a new course.
Exactly, and that's what happened from the NG to the 73 Classic and then from the MAX. So you only have to do a few days conversion and all of a sudden you're on it. But the with the MAX is that it is a new aircraft by design.
Okay.
And part of that new design was the engines that they put on them, still made by CFM, which is a conglomerate of Snecma and General Electric. And the main thing here was that they actually, they're a bigger unit. You had these two big customers, Airbus and Boeing, for this engine. Now, if you put an Airbus A320 side by side with an NG, you will notice one very big difference, and that's the height. So when you've got this bigger engine, these new LEAP engines, as they call them, you can just slot it straight under an Airbus wing, no problem at all. But with the Boeing being lower to the ground, they don't quite have the ground clearance. Now, they have raised the gear a little bit.
And the 737 originally was designed to be low, I think, so that it could go to airports where they didn't basically have a jetway or something. So it was deliberately lower so that it was easier for the passengers to get on and off. Is that about right?
That is exactly about right. Yeah,
absolutely.
So we're now in the realms where we've got this bigger engine now with nowhere to put it.
Okay.
So the fix was, after lots of deliberation, was to basically move it further forward and up a bit.
Okay.
On the wing of the 737.
Okay.
Which sounds initially absolutely fantastic.
Sounds
but,
fine.
Anybody who flies a jet with an underslung engine will realise that there's obviously significant pitch power couple. You know, basically you power up and the engine wants to twist upwards in a nutshell.
So the stuff I fly, when I put the power on with the high engines of BizJet, it'll point the nose down. So in a stall recovery scenario, if I put the power on, it's already helping me. So what you're saying is that with an underslung engine, if you put the power on, it's going to try and pitch you up. So if you're approaching the stall,
exactly,
that's a bad situation anyway.
It is. So this is where the MCAS came in, of course.
Okay.
So they've now got this bigger, more powerful engine with a bigger, more powerful pitch coupling, which is more significant
worse.
Because they've moved the engine forward. So it's increased even more. Now, what they try to do is get it to behave like its predecessor, the 800. So you can get a pilot who's flown the 800 for the last year or so, and then you just stick him straight into the MAX after a 2 or 3 day conversion, and it flies exactly the same.
Gotcha.
So this is why they had to create this MCAS system, which basically automatically adjusts the rear horizontal tail, or the stabilizer as it's called, on that particular aircraft. So what will happen is as the aircraft would pitch, and this is usually in sort of high power, low speed scenarios, so basically low to the ground with flaps up on takeoff, what it will do is it will work behind the scenes. So once it gets above a certain parameter, a certain pitch in the up direction, it will adjust the rear stabilizer to basically drop the nose a bit.
So if it senses if it senses you're approaching the stall, it will start to try and help you effectively by pointing it the
exactly
nose down.
Right. Yeah. And that's at the extreme end. But what this will do is it will sort of, even not necessarily near the stall, even before you get to that, the idea being that as you increase power on takeoff with the flaps out, low speed, high power, it will cater for that pitch power couple. But under the scenes, you won't actually see anything going on in the flight deck.
Right.
Now, then we get to Ethiopian Airlines and Lion Air scenario, which if you look at the data, very, very similar as to what happened and when it happened.
Yeah, shortly after takeoff.
So, exactly. A few minutes after takeoff, the crews came into some trouble. Now, the full investigations haven't been put out there, but the preliminary stuff seems to think that the information that is provided to the MCAS, one of the main ones is the pitch, which comes from the alpha vane, the angle of attack.
The angle of attack sensor,
sensor, which came off one sensor alone. Now, most Boeing sensors are usually dual, so that you have redundancy.
Right.
But on these, it came off the captain's alpha vane only.
Okay.
So my understanding from the information I've read is that they failed.
Yep.
And therefore, it was giving erroneous information. Now, if you look on the internet, basically, the information being provided to the MCAS was as if the aircraft was now almost 60 degrees nose up, which, of course, it wasn't.
No.
It had just failed.
Yeah.
And so the MCAS was adjusting the stabilizer as if the aircraft was 6 degrees nose up. So it was trying to significantly put the nose down.
Right. Which, if the aircraft really was stalling, would have been very helpful. But if it wasn't, it was a pretty bad... It wasn't what the crew needed at all.
No, exactly. So if you look at what actually happened, there ended up in this basically fight between crew and MCAS system. Now, there is some... I mean, on the aircraft, we have sort of memory items for certain non-null events. Now, in both events, Lion Air and Ethiopian, the crews would appear to have done the correct thing. Basically, the rear stabilizer is operated by one of three systems. One, the autopilot.
Yep.
Two, an electric trim with some switches on the control column. And three, belt and braces. On the Boeing, unlike the Airbus, there still is a big metal cable which runs the length of the aircraft, and you can manually turn it with a trim wheel.
Right, okay.
Now, unfortunately, in this occasion, well, they did the right thing. They cut it out.
Yep.
But apparently, and this is where you've got the argy-bargy between Boeing blaming the pilots of the airlines blaming the MCAS system, was actually MCAS was still operating, although they had sort of switched these stab trim cutout switches, which ultimately should have cut the whole system out.
Okay. So every aircraft I've flown, and I'm thinking back to when I did my training on the Lear originally, in the simulator, they used to talk about the RB, the big red button on the yoke. So you hit a big red button, and it basically disconnects all of the autopilot. Is there that on the Boeing? Could the crew have hit the red button and manually flown the aircraft? Or was the MCAS still trying to drive them into the ground even with that? Or is it a different system?
Well, I think the understanding from the pilot's point of view was that, and that is the same on the 800, if we have any kind of issues with the stabilizer, we do have that big red button, what we call the stab tread cutout.
Yep.
So in theory, if I cut that out, that means there's no input from the electric switches. There is no input from the autopilot. All I can do then is manually adjust the stabilizer with a trim wheel and a cable.
Yep.
And there should be no such input. Now, from the information that I've read, there was somehow still some input from the MCAS. Hence why there's this battle where you see this aircraft flying and it's basically pitching up, it's pitching down, it's pitching up, it's pitching down. And the crew are trying to fight this. Now, obviously, in a modern jet, with the speed at which they're flying, the minute you point get down more than sort of 5 degrees, 10 degrees,
it's
nose
down,
it will just accelerate.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then you're in the realms of aerodynamic loading on the stabilizer. So even if they had switched everything off, by the time they were doing sort of, I don't know, 300-400 plus miles an hour, there was that much air load on the stab trim, a little trim wheel that you're trying to pull. You're fighting against an almighty load there.
Probably even turn it.
Exactly. And I think even with both of them physically trying to turn it, I mean, this is just in my humble opinion, but that would seem to be, they ended up in a situation that they just couldn't get themselves out of.
Yeah. So the difference is training that these guys would have had to do before they got onto the MAX. Would they have been made aware of this MCAS system? Would they have understood how it worked, what it did, or is it sort of lurking in there and no one really knew?
Well, I can't say with true certainty because, of course, not all the facts have come out yet regards to this. My understanding is that when the crews first came onto this, the MCAS system wasn't something that was brought to their attention. It was literally something that just worked underneath, you know?
And made the new one fly like the old one, yeah.
Correct, yeah. Absolutely correct, yeah. And this is something that Boeing have done in the past as well, and unfortunately. If you ever want to read about rudder system enhancement programs, that was something else where Boeing just sort of put something out there but didn't necessarily put all the information out to all the crews, whether they thought they were helping them or not or otherwise. And I think this is what's happened here. They've just tried to treat this brand new shiny aircraft like the old one, and perhaps they shouldn't have done. I mean, there's now the argument that actually perhaps the MAX should have been a new type. Yes,
right.
That would have created an awful lot of expense to these big airlines that have got big orders. You know, your Air Southwest, they were a major...
Yeah, Southwest, Ryanair, got a lot of MAXes on order.
Ryanair. But, of course, that would cause a lot of cost increase to the companies having to retype rate.
All of their entire crew who are going to fly the MAX. Yeah.
Correct, yeah. So it is where we are right now. And I think as much as the delay in sorting out the problem with the MCAS, there's a lot of regulatory stuff going through. You know, did the FA, did they just turn a blind eye and let Boeing do what they want or what? I don't know.
It sounds as if a lot of the regulatory decisions were outsourced to Boeing, which does sound a little bit like sort of trusting the poacher to be the gamekeeper.
Yeah, I suppose if you look at it like that, yeah, it is, you know, but and whether we'll ever get to the bottom of it, I don't know. I mean, obviously, Boeing are working very hard to make this system work. Yeah. Obviously, everybody knows about it now. But again, you know, you going back, hopefully there is that big red button so that eventually you can actually just switch the thing off. Well, I do know about the
complete gradual control of the aeroplane, yeah.
Yeah, is well, the sort of what they're trying to do now is actually the input from the MCAS system is you know, is significantly less now.
Is that right?
Operation.
Yeah. Yeah, and presumably they need to have this thing connected to both angle of attack vanes, don't they? I mean, that would also resolve the issue. If the MCAS was only going to kick in from an input from both of the angle of attack vanes, presumably that would also resolve the issue. If one of them goes bad, it's not going to take you to the ground uncommanded. Is that also, I guess, would be the solution, would it?
Well, basically, I think redundancy is the name of the game, as well as actually an improvement in the software. We on the standard NG, there is redundancy for the angle of attack between the left side of the aircraft, if you will, and the right side.
Okay.
On your sort of PFD in front of you, you would have an angle of AOA disagree, which is basically telling you that the left system is in disagreement with the right-hand system.
So you know that one has gone bad.
Correct. That's right. And unfortunately, that's what wasn't in place with the MCAS system. It was drawn purely from a single source, which sadly failed.
Yeah.
And that's why we ended up in the situation that they were.
So they're in America, from what I've read, Boeing are hoping sometime during the fourth quarter, so in the next 3 months, to have the aircraft flying over there. It sounds like it could be quite a while before they're flying everywhere else. It's almost as if some of the aviation authorities around the world that previously just rubber stamped an FAA approval, and we lost a little bit of faith in the FAA process. They want to conduct their own tests. It sounds like EASA want to do their own tests before we see it flying again in Europe.
Well, I there's a lot of pressure right now. There's a lot of pressure on the FAA. There's a lot of pressure on Boeing. I mean, obviously, they're losing billions.
Absolutely,
right now.
Yeah.
I mean, there was to put it in context, the MAX was the fastest selling aircraft ever produced by any manufacturer.
I read that.
Within a very short period of time, there was somewhere in the region of 4,500 orders.
Phenomenal.
Before they grounded it, or rather the Trump administration grounded it.
Yeah. Which in the end had to. I mean, the Chinese, everybody had grounded it. Trump didn't have a choice, did he?
Well, absolutely. I think he did the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, but they'd already, I think they'd fulfilled in the region of about 400 orders, obviously.
Yeah.
So percent of the original orders. But I think a lot of people have lost a lot of faith in it, and it's going to take Boeing an awful lot to claw back that faith in the Boeing product almost. It's not just about the MAX now, it is about Boeing. And it sounds deaf, but you've got people who would never normally ask questions about. I mean, my cousin was going on his holiday about 3 weeks before they grounded it, and he actually, you know, out the blue just said, "I'm going on a MAX with a certain company on holiday. Do I need to be worried?"
Right. What did you say as his cousin and a 737 captain?
Well, at the time, there wasn't a lot of information out about there. So my thing was just basically, I mean, the airline he was with are a very reliable airline.
Yeah, yeah.
Got a fantastic safety record. And I just turned around and said something along the lines of, well, look, you know, if it wasn't safe, they wouldn't allow it to fly. So, I think you'll be absolutely fine. And I suppose in a way I was kind of wrong, actually, you know, but how do you say that's just one person? You know, now you've got thousands, millions of people who are now aware of the 737 MAX. And even if they
afraid of it. Yeah.
Fix it, they will be. And it's going to take a long time before they get that, they sort that problem out, you know, get that resilience back into the product.
Very good. We'll keep an eye on that. And fingers crossed for everybody. If your airline bought some MAXes, would you be happy to fly it? got to ask.
$4 million question.
I think I would need a MAX. Off you go.
I would need to know that I have that big red button.
Absolutely right.
Which, if I turn it off, I turn it off.
And you have control of the airplane, not a gremlin that's lurking. Yeah,
no.
Absolutely right.
Because, do you know what? I've been flying. I mean, I can't argue because I've never flown Airbus before, or I've flown Embraer, or I have flown turboprops, but that's a different culture altogether. But the Boeing as a product, the NG, is a fantastic machine. I've taught the technical part of it. I've instructed on it. And I've flown it, you know. I do get to fly every now and again these days. It is a fabulous machine at what it's designed to do. It's the engines on it, the CFM 56-C 7 engines, are probably the most reliable engine that has ever been invented in terms of flying hours versus significantness.
Yeah.
It truly is. And ultimately, it's still one of those aircraft when it all goes pear-shaped. Unlike the Airbus, which is true fly-by-wire, we still have big cables connecting us to the flight controls.
Yep.
So you can disconnect all the automatics and just fly it like a big, you know, like a big Cessna sort of. So hopefully they will regain that level of faith in the MAX eventually.
Absolutely. Sandy, that's been absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much indeed, Captain Sandy Whittaker. If you've enjoyed listening to this edition of the Julian Story Aviation Podcast, then don't forget to subscribe so that you don't miss a single episode. You can find us on iTunes, Amazon Alexa, just ask Alexa to play you the Julian Story Aviation Podcast, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and all the normal places that you would download your podcast from. If you have any comments about the podcast or have any great ideas for a podcast guest, drop me an email to podcast@julianstory.co.uk. Finally, stay safe in what are unquestionably the strangest of times, and if you're one of the lucky ones who's still managing to fly, fly safe and keep it shiny side up.
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.